everybody. Welcome to the New in Chess podcast. The New in Chess podcast is brought to you by DGT, the leading producer of chess clocks and sensory chess boards that are used in major and minor competitions all around the world. My name is Dirk Anton Gersendam. In the New in Chess podcast, we talk to leading grandmasters, authors, trainers, and personalities from the fascinating world of chess. Today's guest is one of the greatest champions of our game, none other than the First Lady of Chess, Judith Polgár. Of course, Judith Polgár needs no introduction, but who would like to miss the opportunity to introduce her? Certainly not me. Judith is the strongest female chess player of all time. At the age of 15 years and 4 months, she broke Bobby Fischer's record to become the youngest grandmaster in history. For more than 2 decades, she competed successfully with the very best and became the first and only woman ever to enter the World Top 10. In her career, she defeated 11 current or former world champions in classical or rapid chess. You heard correctly, 11. Judith retired from professional chess in 2014, but continues to be one of the most loved ambassadors of the game. She's a welcome guest all around the world, and every year she has her own amazing global chess festival in Budapest. Budapest is the city where Judith has lived all her life. It's also the city where the Olympiad starts on September 10, and where this year's Global Chess Festival will take place on September 17 and 18. And so it's not a big mystery why we are delighted to have Judith Polgár as today's guest on the New in Chess podcast. Judith, thank you very much for joining us from Budapest. How are you doing?
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very happy to join you and have a chat. In Budapest, actually, it's beautiful because it's not so hot anymore.
That's hot. It was very hot.
It was really, really hot, but Now it's very nice.
Yeah. I guess things must be pretty crazy with the Olympiad coming up and the festival. How are your days filled? Well filled or crazily filled?
Well, what I can say is that I'm energized and I'm happy that the very exciting few weeks will happen in Budapest. And this time the Chess Olympiad will be surrounding the Global Chess Festival, which is going to be on the free day of the Olympiad. So I'm very excited from many aspects that how we will have the Olympiad. I do hope that everybody will enjoy the city, as I do believe that it's one of the most beautiful cities in the world. The weather will be great in September already. I hope everything will be just organized the way it should be. The location is somewhere that the hotels are very nearby compared to some other places where Olympiads were. So I think it is very exciting for many who just wants to visit and take the participation, which is already a big thing. And of course, for those who are playing and fighting for medals, it will be a lot of fun to see and meet a lot of old friends and colleagues from every part of the chess community. At the same time, of course, I'm extremely excited to have the festival on the free day of the Olympiad. And the reason we put it on that day, because many people heard already about the festival. This is the 10th anniversary of the Global Chess Festival, which had some pre-years of it as well. And many people said, well, it would be nice to see it. And, you know, I mean, you have to travel for that. So I thought, well, once they are here already, if they really want to see it, on the free day, they can visit. And it's going to be in the Hungarian National Gallery, which is...
Yeah, which is a really spectacular venue, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very spectacular. It's very unique. Each year, many people telling me that, how is it possible that they enter you to the National Gallery having tons of kids around as well? But so far, so good. So it's kind of a tradition for 5 years, I think, that we are there every year. One day we are there. And this year it's going to be 2 years event. And we're going to have the Education in Chess Summit, which I'm very excited as well. And my foundation will also represent itself at the Expo Center area next to the Olympiads. So there are a lot of exciting things happening, and there are tons of things to do for preparation for that.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, maybe you can tell a bit more about the festival, because let's say if somebody says Global Chess Festival, then people might think, okay, you're going to play chess there or whatever. But it's very much also an educational festival, which you say with the the second day that you have with all kinds of lectures. And how would you describe the festival to people who have never been there?
Well, you know, it's interesting that during the years, many people are asking me, what is this so special that the people were there and they're enthusiastic and they say, wow, it was so good. I think with years, I understood that it's because it is very inspirational. So actually this year, we are celebrating the 10th anniversary, having the theme of inspiration.
Yeah.
And the reason is because the location is very beautiful, very inspiring, the art. I mean, I don't have to tell you about it, how inspiring an artistic environment is. And basically the whole building on all floors, you see chess or chess-related activities, whether it's kids trying out the Chess Palace program of mine, whether we have a book signing with the Three Sisters this year. So that will be very unique for me also, not to talk about our fans. Also, my parents are going to be here. My father will exhibit and make a tournament of his superstar star chess event. We have always challenges by Morgan Stanley. They have an incredible number of great players in the office, so you can challenge them. We have a tournament running for amateurs. Of course, there is a space limitation. And we are going to have a very special, unique event this year. The focus will be on the central focus will be on the community SIMO, which means that I'm going to be playing against 8 communities and 4 online communities and 4 non-online communities, which means that I'm going to be playing on 8 boards. But for example, when I play against the Hungarian community, or I play against the chess nerd from Canada, a youngster with his community or with chess.com or chesskid.com, they are sitting there alone communicating with the community and deciding on making a move. While the other communities who are going to be several, for example, we're going to have an artist team and we're going to have a journalist team. So we have quite a few or Hungarian legends. And there you're going to see 3, 4, 5 people consulting the move, probably some people around helping them out, and then they make the move. Mm-hmm. So this will be about a 3-hour event where I hope that it's going to be fun also for the viewers who can follow only from distance live, but also for the people who are there. And we will have some very special guests also who are going to be there. So it's going to be very exciting on the spot there in the National Gallery with a lot of action, a lot of colorful activities. We also have someone, a very talented young painter with his wife, Danielle Labros and Nicole, painting a chess-themed painting during my SIMO, for example, which is unfolded right there. So there are a lot of things which I hope it's inspiring for chess players, for non-chess players, for grandmasters, for celebrities. And that's what it is all about, the festival itself, that we have colorful events on many thousand square meters.
Yeah. Well, I had the pleasure and privilege to be at the festival some years ago. And what surprised me was the incredible variety, the many-sidedness. I mean, I was absolutely stunned by how diverse things were. It was much, much, much more than only chess, and chess was presented in so many, well, different ways and truly inspiring kids. I've rarely seen so many happy kids together. Well, but where do you get the inspiration from, or your team to create? What is the underlying idea of the festival?
Basically, I mean, my style in chess was always very creative. I think that is not too many people who would doubt on that or argue on that. I always liked on the chessboard solutions, which is unexpected, very strange, even sometimes suspicious, but sometimes it was incredible that it worked out. So I always liked artistic, original, interesting, curious ideas on the chessboard. And I found out that I like it in other parts of life as well. And when
Mm-hmm.
I started the whole thing to develop from an afternoon simultaneous exhibition to grow it as big as now, it was the main idea was that chess is much more interesting than just the chessboard and the pieces. I was there for 3 decades competing, nearly 3 decades only competing on the chessboard. But there are so many ways to show and to make connections and metaphors with chess and life, chess in education, chess in art in so many ways, chess something which can be part of your life and enrich your life, any age group, or also chess is something that it can unite the different generations to have a common language to talk. So all these, I'm always making combinations as I did on the chessboard. I do also with the festival, and also one of my specialty when I, when people think, okay, this didn't work out, this is what a bad luck that it's like that. How to turn things from bad to good, you know, or what doesn't work. Let's see the bright side. Let's see the new opportunity in that. And there are it, my flexibility and resilience, what a chess player needs a lot. I need that every day. So I'm telling to my colleague, whether it's the festival organization or it's about my new book series for children. We were working on that for 2 years. I'm telling them continuously, resilience, flexibility, a little more resilience, working with people and working for demand and how to do things. And I can practice this, what I practiced as a competitive player, I can practice this. And of course, I still like it to be original, to be creative, to come up with ideas in a different way, to combine things in a way that people would not think that it would work. Like in food, you combine tastes you would never think. I do that with chess and chess related activities, that it can one another, it can be very well fit next to each other. And I'm enjoying it to create new things and to show that chess is definitely not only a sport. And of course, many people think that me, who was such a competitive player, I want to show it in so many different ways, chess. So it's also for some people, it's surprising that I'm going in this way into education, organization, and developing programs.
Well, but it is a way of being an ambassador of the game and showing that as all these other aspects. I think it's great that it's part of the Olympiad now. Because, well, it always used to, well, the festival traditionally is in October, so you moved it back a bit, so that many people during the Olympiad will have a chance to go there, and I definitely advise them to do that. And then, of course, there is the Olympiad. I mean, how does it? What were your first feelings when you realized the Olympiad was going to be held in Budapest?
I was happy. I was happy that Budapest will host the Olympiad this year. At the same time, of course, you know that there are a lot of responsibilities when you organize such a big thing. I'm not involved in the organization myself, but I'm closely seeing what's going on and how it's working and progressing and the challenges of the organizing the event. And I mean, I was part of Olympiads on very different venues, very different circumstances, and in very different posts.
Yeah.
I was playing as a player. The first Olympiad, I was 12 years old, playing with my sisters in 88, right? And we won the gold medal. Then we repeated that. Then one Olympiad I skipped. And in 94, when I was nearly 18, I was playing, representing the national team of the men's team, first board. Then I was captain also. Then the last Olympiad in Chennai, I was in a post of being the commentator. So I'm very happy this time that I'm a visitor this time.
Yeah. Well,
I can enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting to look at the things that you mentioned in more detail. Let's say for me, the Olympiad is one of my absolute favorite events. I mean, there's so many players, officials, journalists from all over the world, and you see them, well, you know, you're going to see them every 2 years, and in between, you're never sure if you're going to see them or not. So it's such a beautiful reunion. Do you also have that feeling that it's so, well, that it's such a wonderful opportunity besides the competitive aspect?
Oh, absolutely. I think 80% of the people are thinking that way, that the Olympiad is the gathering of the chess community, where you see old friends from your childhood, friends who you were playing and competing in under 10 and under 12 and under 14 and in juniors. So you find the new talents there. Like now also, we are going to say Bodana, for example, in the ladies British team. So you see newcomers, you see already talents from India, for example, or who are really like a geyser, they are just coming. And you see the older guys who are like, maybe they are 30 or 35. I mean, that's already an old age also in chess, I think. But definitely, and I also think the top players also look very much ahead for similar reasons, mm-hmm. even though that it's much more stressful for them, because they actually come here to win the gold medal and not only just represent their country.
Yeah,
but it's always a lot of action, a lot of fun, and I think Budapest can be really a very entertaining and serving the players the way that they can enjoy themselves in many different way yeah. during the Olympiad, and of course not to talk about the Bermuda party. I think many people are
well. That's a dangerous one, because it's the evening before your festival. I mean, you may lose some people there.
Oh, absolutely! I know that the Bermuda party can be a rival on that, but my festival is actually opening at 10 and finishing after 5 p.m. So,
all right.
So anyway, you can reach it. But I mean, an Olympiad is something when you talk about a concert. It's like a very special, very unique atmosphere that you see. I mean, you see nearly 2,000 players playing at the same time. If you just go into the playing hall, you feel the tension in the quietness of the environment, right? You have this expo area where people are going, the fan zone, people follow, especially when towards the end, it has a completely different feeling because it has a rhythm, right? People arrive, you bump into your old friend. Oh, I haven't seen you for ages. Wow.
Yeah.
And then you go into the Olympiad, you met everybody, but still round six, and you still bump into someone who you didn't meet for 20 years. And, oh, I haven't seen you during the game when you go to the bathroom, let's say. And then, of course, the last three, four rounds already, everybody is very sharp, seeing who is going to be the champion, what drama is going on. And I mean, it's very special, of course, for many of us, it's a favorite thing. Of course, when I was a player, it's another thing because you have to focus. You cannot be distracted. And it's very easy to be distracted in Olympiad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you just mentioned the Bermuda party. Maybe we should explain to people who have never been to the Olympiad, but that is a party halfway through the event. And which is always full of surprises, because suddenly you see people dance that you had never imagined you would see dance in your life. And people get married. So there's always stories there. But we will see what happens this year. But maybe you can go back to your very first Olympiad experience. 1988, Thessaloniki. You're 12 years old. You're going there with your sisters and Ildikó Mádl. You're the Hungarian team, and it's one of those very rare occasions that you've played in a women's competition. Of course, the idea was to win gold, and that's what you did. How do you remember that Olympiad? Did you have any idea where you were going when you were going there? What kind of a competition it was?
Well, obviously, before, we were following Olympiads and with a lot of excitement. I mean, you can imagine that. When I was 10 and I was following the Olympiad before that, wow, what's going on? We receive the moves, the games, and you check how the biggest guys are playing, right? And then finally, I mean, there was excitement for many different reasons. First of all, it was the first chess Olympiad we played. Secondly, we were extremely young. The average age of Hungarian team was 16.
Yeah.
Then it was... we knew that Garry Kasparov, the world champion is playing there, Karpov is playing there, and many other top classic god played there, right? I mean, what really represents the essence of the game, those characters were there. And we also knew that the Soviets in the late 80s, they just were winning for 30 years.
Yeah.
So it's definitely they know something, right? They have the perseverance, they have the fighting spirit, they are there, they have many, many success behind them. So it's a long tournament, 14 rounds at the time, what we had. And so it was very, very interesting. At the same time, I remember exactly very vividly when we were flying over already Thessaloniki, 10, 15 minutes before landing, and we were discussing about, well, we should win medal and we should win gold. And then Ildiko was telling that, well, maybe silver is also good. No, we have to win the gold. Because actually in rating points, we were quite high already. And yeah. I was not so high, but 2365, I believe. But I won practically all the tournament that year where I played. So it was very clear that I'm in a big form. But we didn't know whether I will continue my form or not. And I did. But the problem was that actually in the Soviet team, there was also a lady who was, Akhmilovskaya, was also winning against everybody. And then some twists and turns, of course, luck needed also, but it turned out that that we won. So it was an amazing experience, especially for me that I was making the best performance of the whole Olympiad.
Yeah.
Gary was watching my game. That was something extremely inspirational. And of course, winning the gold for Hungary, that was a very big milestone in the families.
Yeah, did it also improve your situation? Because, I mean, your family had a lot of problems with the authorities. I mean, there were really difficult times when there was a lot of pressure on the family because, well, the authorities didn't like the experiment that your parents were conducting with you and your sisters. And now suddenly you brought them gold. Did that lead to some acceptance or that people suddenly look differently at you?
Oh, absolutely. This is why it was a milestone actually in my family's life, because it was something that that finally we proved something really big that there was no argument to take there. So actually after that, we also got the biggest and the highest award, state award, which was possible to receive. And it was very clear that we got to a very different status in Hungary. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that they were very supportive and believed the fact that I can be, for example, a grandmaster and go much further beyond that. But they really acknowledged as much as they could the gold medal, obviously.
Yeah.
So that's why it was a very big satisfaction for my father, for my mother, that finally something that they are also proud of.
Yeah.
Even though we made a lot of big progress, but you couldn't see it. You couldn't materialize it this way, right, in medals. Yeah. But actually, really, we brought some pride for the country.
Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by DGT, the chess innovators. Discover your perfect chess friend. The DGT Centaur is a chess computer that automatically adapts itself to your playing strength. It gives you a fair chance to win, to learn, and most importantly, to have fun. To find your nearest DGT dealer, please visit our website at dgt.nl.
Well, let's say all through your career, you've been opening doors. You've improving situation, been improving situation for female players because of your results and the things that you achieved. And I think it's these days it's almost difficult to realize how completely different the situation was then. That in 1988, it wasn't even allowed within the World Chess Federation for a woman or a girl to play in the men's competition. It was just against the rules. Now you see it more often, but I mean, you have lived through that time and experienced it firsthand, that there was this very clear divide between women and men in chess, and it's not that long ago that it was so completely different.
Well, it's some decades
which
passed, but it was of course very different. I mean, we didn't have computers. We didn't have emails, we didn't have connections with people, with players. It was so difficult to have trainers. Like in those times, it was very common that when we had tournaments running in Hungary, the Spring Festival, for example, or other events, my parents went there and they were looking who is a strong player, and they were inviting them to stay at our place and to play some chess. Yeah. So it was a very different times in many ways that my parents had to be resourceful, how to make it possible that we are training, we are improving, we are traveling. Of course, in those days, that was also a huge challenge.
Yeah.
But after the Olympia, things got simpler, better, easier.
Well, and actually, 2 years later in Novi Sad, you won again, and it was even more... Well, let's say even more convincing, because you were all three of you were playing first, second, and third board. So I remember people calling your team Bulgaria, and it was another success. But was it a bit repetitive for you already? Did you think, okay, we've already done that?
You know, it was so different. I mean, while the first Olympiad in 88, when I was 12, it was exciting, interesting, challenging, a lot of things happening on the way, good and bad things, and still we won. It was such a victory. At the same time, when we went back 2 years later, there was an expectation from us that don't even come home if you don't win gold.
Yeah.
And you know, this pressure is not something that is a very good feeling.
Yeah.
And the other thing was, it's not only that there was a huge expectation from the public in Hungary, and okay, can they do it again? And how good are they? And was it by chance the year, 2 years before? And you know, all these doubts that people internationally and nationally had. Also, it was kind of mixed feelings for some people that the three of us represented in some rounds Hungary. But the fact was that we were by far highest rated top three women players.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, I mean, what can we do? Of course, my parents were very proud, but for some it was not exactly so obvious that why is it so great that one family is representing the whole country?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I didn't play as well as I did in 88. And the stress was much higher. And I remember, again, very vividly, when we finished all our games, the Soviet team and the Hungarian team, and it was in a big sport hall, and we were up sitting on the chairs with our captain, Laszlo Hazai, my former trainer also. And we are waiting. We had the same amount of points with Soviet Union. And we were waiting until someone on board 35, they were finishing the game, because that decided the secondary calculation, who is going to get the gold or the silver in their net. And it was so frustrating to realize that you were here for 3 weeks almost, fighting every single day. Out of the three games, because at that time we had only three boards, we made a bigger average than 2.5 per match. And still we are sitting there, and completely by chance that we take gold and we are heroes again, or we take only the silver, and then people are disappointed that, oh, it's only silver.
Yeah.
So it was so frustrating, that feeling of that 1 hour or 2 hour, that I said, okay, we proved it once, we proved it this time, whether it's silver or gold, doesn't matter, I'm done with that. Because what's the point to fight that who is beating the others on a bigger score? So it was not like that there is five teams and we are racing, right? It's only two by far much better than the others.
Yeah.
And then I said, okay, this was it. And luck turned out to be on our side. And we won again. And then next Olympiad, we did not play, none of us. And then in 94 already, I played in the open section.
Yes, then you switched to the open section. But then a lot had happened in those 4 years. I mean, you had become the youngest grandmaster in history, beating Bobby Fischer's record. You had tremendous results. Still, what kind of a change was that? I mean, it must have been entering a totally different world. I mean, first you had this team with your sisters, and now suddenly, well, you're playing in an all-male team where you were the only girl.
It was a big change, of course, in that 4 years. Clearly, indeed, what you mentioned, that I became grandmaster, I had my title. And it was very interesting to play in the national team of Hungary on board one, having one of the oldest participants in it, I mean, clearly much older participant in the team, like Lajos Portis, the legend of Hungary, and Leko Peter Leko, who was even younger than I was. I was not even 18 at the time, and he was 15. So we had a very mixed team at that time, and we didn't even play it so well. It was exciting. It was in Moscow. It was very cold.
Oh, yeah.
Very cold winter.
And very dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very tricky.
Yeah.
It was like tricky. We stayed in the Cosmos Hotel, I remember. So a lot of memories. But it was very exciting. It was a very big thing for me that I represented Hungary on board one. And that went on, of course, later to many upcoming Olympiads.
Well, you mentioned Lajos Portis, who was this legend, and well, who, let's say, was a fairly traditional man. Was it tough for him to have you on first board, or could he accept that?
I don't remember so much already that time. How was it? But he was okay.
Mm-hmm.
At some point already, that he understood. I mean, after I won the Super Championship in Hungary in 1991, when I was 15, by breaking Bobby Fischer's record with that event, that was a huge turning point in Hungary, the way they looked at me and the way they accepted the way we lived, the way my parents believed in things, the lifestyle we had. So that was a very big turning point. And
yeah.
This was already 94, a few years later, that, because the Super Championship, which I won, really all the top guys played. Portis, Sachs, Adorian, Horvat, Ribley. So everybody played. Really, it was a Super Championship with everybody. So that was a huge, huge event. And after that, it was okay.
Yeah, you had really proven something there. I mean, if they didn't see it then, when were they going to see it?
Yeah, it was not easy. I had to prove it many times, but I was going and proving it again and again and again.
Yeah. Well, you've always had this, well, let's say this clear choice of I want to play in the strongest tournaments, and I don't want to go to the women's events. They still exist, and there's many reasons why girls or women want to play them, and they should be there. But has your thoughts about this, have they changed or evolved over the years? I mean, should every strong girl or woman strive to play in the open tournaments, or is there some sense in women's tournaments as well? I mean, what is your take on that these days? I mean, how do you see that?
I think simply there are many things in life that it just, that's the way it is. And just because that's how it is these days for many years, let it be that way, because it's easier than to make changes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because to make changes, usually people do changes when it's very necessary. Either it's someone who likes very much adventures and they just change because of the adventure part. But generally, people like things that they do, the patterns, they do it frequently, right? So they don't want to change. And again, women in chess and having tournaments for women only, it is something like that, that why should we? Why should we change? Why should coaches change their mindset? Why should the circumstances change? So it is a very tricky question. And obviously, you can imagine how many times I've received this question, that what do I think about women's chess? Do I think we should be deleting all the women tournament? And what should we say to kids? And what should we do in the club? And what should we do here? And So one of the things, and many times I'm thinking about it, that what is a solution? Is there a solution? Does anybody care about it to make a different perspective for women? Because there are many angles of it, right? So, I mean, there are quite a few ladies who are on the top who really work hard in some period of their life. They work hard, they dedicated their hours every day, many hours, even though they had family, kids, whatever, they really focused on becoming a champion, right? So you do see quite a few ladies on the top who have this incredible fighting spirit and dedication and love for the game. But it's interesting for me that I've never spoken with the lady from the top who said that, yes, I believe that women can become just as good as guys because there is no difference. Mm-hmm. There is difference, but it's not the difference women and men have that it would stop you from becoming a top 10 player, let's say. So this way it's difficult because, of course, many of the top ladies, you're top in your own country, you're a role model. You want it or you don't, you're the role model of the country, right? So it does matter what they say also to girls, to the next generation, to the parents, what the coaches are telling to the small ones, whether you can become a world champion and become better than Magnus, or you tell them that you can become better than Hu Yifan, let's say, you know? Because then you position them in a very different way. But for example, lately I was thinking that, is there something, let's say one thing, that we could change? And then maybe the environment and the life of chess and girls and women in chess would change. And I thought that maybe it would be possible and it would be just a very good try to test it at least, to delete the women titles. You know?
That's quite something.
I mean, why do we have women titles? Why don't you have title for 2000, for 22, for 23, for 24, for 25, for 26, 27? Isn't it much better to have the rating titles and not that it's women or men? Mm-hmm.
Which would create an entirely new situation, perhaps.
But you know, it's very interesting that sometimes with a very simple thing, very big changes can happen. Because suddenly the mindset of ladies would also say that, okay, it does not matter whether I play on an open tournament or a women tournament. I'm aiming to get this title. This title belongs to my rating, not to the gender question. Mm-hmm. It's my strength. It's my knowledge. It's what I can perform, right?
Yeah.
So I think that would be kind of a first step, which could be extremely simple solution, and it would not hurt at all, nor women nor men.
Oh, that's very interesting, because I think in general you're right that you shouldn't be too dogmatic about whether there should be women's tournaments or not, but it's all individual choices at some point. I mean, you wanted to play the strongest tournaments. I think Hu Yifan had that ambition, and I seem to remember an interview with Zhu Wenjun when she said, I don't want to be, well, women a world champion per se. I want to play I want to get stronger in an absolute manner. And that is probably something which you don't see in a broad sense in women's chess, that there is this ambitions within the limits of women's chess.
Yeah, but I think it's very important for our audience to understand that we many times talk about women chess and open competition. But the main thing is we are really talking about, until a certain point, we talk about women. They are 2,200 player.
Yeah.
2,200 player, women or men. For a girl, for example, of 9 years old, who is a 2,100 player, let's say, I mean, she can play in a woman tournament. There is no problem of that because her opponents will be stronger or the same. 2,100, 2,300, whatever, right? So on that age, it's not a big issue whether you play on a woman tournament or an open tournament. The question is, what is the strength of your opponent compared to your level? So this is kind of, it gets tricky when you really specify already the qualifications, the national events, then it's about the titles of that specific event. But generally speaking, when you're a kid, you can play girls, you can play boys, you can be teenagers, whatever. But see who you play with. So look your strengths and look your improvement from today to tomorrow, from tomorrow to day after tomorrow, because that's how you can improve. And then you look around what it is good for and where you reach. But I just don't see any point to specifically make a selection that where you play. But I'm very happy that there are some events and some organizers who are making serious steps in order to invite women to open section, even round robin events like Gibraltar, like Vacanzee, like different open tournaments all over the world. So that is something I think very encouraging for ladies.
Yes. No, I totally agree. As you already indicated at the start, I mean, you have a very rich Olympiad career, starting as this 12-year-old girl, ending as a coach or a commentator. In between, there were some really good results. I mean, Hungary, you twice took silver. Did you see them as specific moments in your career? Or, I mean, they must have been highlights for Hungarian chess.
Oh, Bled when we won in 2002, that was amazing. Especially that in 2000, we missed the medal with Miracle. That was very painful in Istanbul. That was a very painful event for me from the perspective. I mean, I had a fantastic event. I have some of my most memorable games played there. I won 8 games. I made +6 or something. So I made a huge result. And we were just so, so, so close to get a medal. And everything turned out badly in the last round. And then nothing. I left with nothing, not even a board. Before the last round, I was board gold. But of course, that's completely secondary in Olympiad for us, because the team medal is what counts the most. But we left with nothing. And then 2 years later in Bled, it was a beautiful location around the lake. We stayed in a very nice hotel, very near. It was very, very small, the playing hall. I remember very well. And also, I think that was the first Olympiad where they introduced the doping control in 2002. And I remember I had some funny games there. I can't say I played so well, but I was successful pretty much. And we had a big game where Leko could win in one move against Kasparov, but he didn't. And Russia won, and then we became second. So that was, I mean, we could feel that we were all the way, we were fighting for a medal. So that was a very good feeling, very good team with Almashi, with Leko. With Peter Arch at the time, he was still competitive and professional, and I think it was Dimashi and Rook. So it was a very pretty young team, and we were very happy with that medal. And of course, later on in 2014, it was extreme. I mean, for me to win the silver medal at the same time when I announced my professional play retirement, it was like a real present. I mean, I can't call it differently.
You saw it as some farewell present, yeah?
Sorry?
You saw it as some farewell present.
Yeah, I mean, that was very fair from. I mean, it was kind of a real present that I could finish my career that way, because, I mean, it was really very special.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you bring back these memories of 2002 in Bled. Well, there was this close fight, and what I actually liked there was that this, well, this hall was so small, and in fact, everything was small. So you, when you went out, the only choice you had was to have this walk around the lake, but that's what everyone did. Yes. So you would be running into people all the time around the lake, which in fact was extremely nice. And then in the playing hall, the situation was kind of cramped. And then Garry Kasparov, he was very, very tense. So he was very annoyed if somebody came close to him. So that there was a lot of atmosphere there, which, I mean, there was this microcosmos of the Olympiad. And I think I like that a lot.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's interesting, as you say, that I mean, really, that's what you remember, right? I mean, in other Olympiads, you remember the city, you remember here and there. But really, in Bled, you remember the lake. Yeah. And you remember the playing hall. I remember the hotel, which was also just next to the lake. Yeah. And indeed, whenever you were walking around the lake, which was, I think, like nearly, I don't know, an hour and a half, depending how fast you're walking, some players were running every day, some people were walking, but you could make sure that whatever time of the day you're walking there, you will bump into someone.
Yeah. I remember one evening, it was already getting dark, and I was going for a walk, and I went there alone, and suddenly someone comes out of the bushes, and I really get a fright, because I have no idea who it is. And then I look, and it's Eugene Torra. And I said, Eugene, it's you. But it was always some relief. And of course, well, Eugene is one of the legends of the Olympiad. I think he played most of the Olympiads, and now he's the captain of the Philippine team.
You love chess. Why don't you try New in Chess? With readers in 116 countries, New in Chess is the premier chess magazine in the world. What will you get? Exciting chess games explained by the best experts in a clear and accessible way. On-the-spot reports of the biggest events. Top-notch instruction. Independent journalism, chess history that comes to life, and great interviews. New in Chess, the way you want it. The beautifully produced paper edition or the digital edition for phone, tablet, or PC. Give it a try. Go to our website, newinchess.com/magazine, for more information about subscriptions and special offers.
And you were the captain. I mean, how was that? I mean, how was that decided? Were you asked, and did you give it some thought, or were you happy to do it quickly?
I was asked to become a captain before the Olympiad already. After my retirement in 2014, it was my retirement, and in 2015 they asked me to take the position of being the captain of my teammates who did not quit chess at the time and were very active, and Rapport, of course, who started his first Olympiad when I finished in 2014. And I said, well, I asked all the guys, all the players, that what do you think about me being the captain? For me, it's an exciting new challenge. If everybody says that it's okay and they are happy that I'm there, I promise them that I will fight for the conditions, I will fight for training camps, for traveling time to get good rooms. I mean, I'm a player myself, so I know what all the complaints and the debates were in the previous year. So I will help them. I will bring them coffee. I will not prepare them. If they have some concrete question on chess, I may answer with some smartness or may not, but I'm not a coach. I'm the captain. And then it was in Reykjavik, the European Championship, and everything went fantastic, and we won a medal. And that was great, and they were happy. I was happy. Everything went well. But at the Olympiad already, there were some changes in the federation, and there were some conflicts between Leiko and the federation. And somehow we couldn't make him play. So we couldn't have the best team there at the Olympiad in 2016 in Baku. I had Rapport, who was unfortunately in a very bad shape for personal reasons. And so it was a very difficult challenge to be the captain in Baku.
And it was, you had a very young team, right? It was a very young team.
It was a young team. It was the first time that Richard was on board once. So there was a lot of pressure and he was in very bad form and bad time of his life. And also there were new rules for fair play in that Olympiad. Like they were checking when you go out to the bathroom, you come back and they check you again. They can check anytime. So there were some very unpleasant new rules, which was completely ununderstandable. And actually they changed it, even some of them on the way on the Olympiad. And but still we could in the, what was it, last round or last before the last round, we played, wow, I don't remember. Was it Spain? I'm not sure. And Gladura Benjamin, who was a new player, and it was the first Olympiad for him, he was winning. And even if he makes a draw, we would be on top eight in the Olympiad, which would be a huge result, maybe even six, I don't remember, but we would be in the top eight for sure. And he ruined it. He was not following the other boards, and he got confused, and he lost his winning position. So that was very sad. So we were not in the top 10. It was a very nice experience for me, so I'm not regretting it. But unfortunately, I didn't have Leko in the team. I had a very bad form rapport and not very experienced Gladura, let's say. But it was fun. It was interesting. It was an experience. We had some good times, bad times, but not such a successful time.
Well, there's many types of captains. And what I remember from you there was that you took it very seriously. I mean, you were really, watching all the matches, fully. It was not just, as you say, getting coffee for the guys. No, you were following everything permanently.
Oh, of course. I was following. I mean, I remember when, not in the Olympiad, but now another thing I remember when it was the European Championship where we won medal, that when Berkes was playing there and I was calculating, oh my God, such a beautiful combination. So of course I got excited, but I couldn't make any expression on my face. But of course I was following and I saw the ups and downs and opportunities and missed opportunities and the time management of the players, of course. And then there I was talking with other captains, they who had much more experience than I had. They said, oh, okay, first 3 hours, don't even watch the games. It doesn't make any sense. Anything can happen. In the fourth hour, you can look at it. Don't waste your energy and nerves. But I was there following closely.
Do you recall any moments where you could use your experience and tell them stories that say, okay, this happens? What I remember from the Olympiad, the previous Olympiad, where Gukesh lost it, this very dramatic game against Abdusatorov, and I think Vishyanand, he did the most kind thing in the world, that he invited Gukesh, and he said, just come over, and he showed him all his stupid losses. Well, simply said. And I thought that was so extremely kind, to put things in perspective and to use your experience to help a young player. There must have been things like that when you were coaching these young guys that you could help them with advice from your experience.
There were some moments when some of the players said, okay, let's go for a walk, let's talk about it. I had a tough game, and then we were talking. I was trying to cheer them up, get over on some mistakes or some missed opportunities. And I think it was good. At least I was really trying, so I could very much feel what they feel. Obviously, because I was just retired from competitive. I mean, nowadays, sometimes I have problem, you know. I mean, it was so long time ago. Mm. How was it exactly? But that time it was so close that, of course, I remembered every feeling. Even now, if I follow, of course, it comes back, that your nerves, your stress level, your calculation, time travel, whatever you have to deal with, or the panic. What opening to play, what to play against the Najdorf or the Svechnikov, other openings, right? So, of course, I can feel their pain a lot, and because of that, I was also trying to help if I felt that there is a need.
Yeah. Well, let's say a lot of your concentration the coming weeks will be for the Global Chess Festival. But once that's over, you will have time to focus on the chess as well. I think it's a pretty unpredictable Olympiad that we're going to see both in the Open and the women's tournaments. Tournament. What are your expectations? I mean, how do you look at the top teams in both sections? Who do you see as the clear favorites or the
dark
horses?
Well, to tell you the
truth,
there are clear favorites on paper. This is the Olympiad. Mm-hmm. There we talk about clear favorites when we start. Okay, round one. Let's see the list. Well, who are the highest, right? And I mean, let's say in Chennai, there were a lot of things which were special. For example, Russia was away and China was absent as well. Then for US, it seemed like it's an easy go, right? They had the top players, I think four the top 10 players in the world.
Yeah.
So basically, they were just so far. Like they had, I think, 100 rating points average higher than the next one. Of course, it's an Olympiad. It's team. It's not individual. It's pressure. It's expectation. It's rivalry. It's tension in the team. You can name many, many different things. And there were the Indians. And there was the A team, the B team, and the C team.
Yeah.
And the B team, the baby team, everybody knew that something they can show what the world was not ready for. And you could see that US, I mean, they should have won, but the pressure, the expectation was so high that they made incredible mistakes, incredible, unbelievable mistakes in the team. And of course, once you start making mistakes, there is more tension, more frustration. So the tournament can be very long.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how Uzbekistan. Could anybody bet on Uzbekistan before the Chennai event, even halfway? How many people would bet on them, right? Maybe Ivan Sokolov, who was the coach of them and the captain, he could say that, watch out. And it was amazing. I mean, to see the Uzbek team, to the fighting spirit, the grab the opportunities, all this. I mean, really, so much focused when it's needed. It was really exceptional. At the same time, it was absolutely brilliant to follow Gukesh.
Hmm.
I mean, when I was a commentator, it was really such a joy to see his games, to see his focus and concentration. And of course, you couldn't see his expression really because he was playing in a mask at the time still.
Yeah.
So, but it was so incredible. And it was very incredible from the moment that I could witness very closely history unfolding, which will actually we see, right? 2 years later, we see Gukesh being the candidate for the challenger of the World Championship match.
Yeah.
So it was very exceptional. But what I want to say is that, okay, this year China is back. So, which means that he's absolutely wants to get a medal. The only question is how shiny it is. And of course, India is there. But they also play with pressure because let's face it, by now there are expectations and hopes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a completely different mindset. When 2 years ago they played, everybody thought, wow, they can do something. It's like with us, it was 88 winning, and then in 90 there were the expectations. So I think it's very similar with the Indian team here for the open section. But of course, the Uzbek guys, for sure, they want to defend their title. And you never know if they have an incredible team spirit, work ethic, work whatever, and of course, luck. Sorry, luck cannot be escaping you if you want to win.
Well, it feels like a very close-knit team. I mean, the atmosphere, I think there's nothing wrong with the atmosphere there. And they have a very special coach this time.
Who?
Very, very remarkable. Vladimir Kramnik is going to be their coach.
Ah, yes. I heard that, but I thought it was a gossip.
He's officially on the list, so I think that's the plan, which is quite remarkable, I would say. So
that's very interesting, of course. And I believe that if he's the captain and coach, it means that they had some training sessions, so it can't hurt.
Yeah.
For their chess.
Yeah.
Well, I think if we are going to see an exceptionally interesting battles and fight. And what I was very happy to hear that Netherlands is number 4 on the list.
They're seeded 4th, yeah.
I mean, that's so nice to hear. I'm very curious. But also what I'm extremely curious to see and amazing, that Norway is number 6.
Yep.
I mean, Magnus is there. He's fighting. He brought up the team members. And I know that he's really exceptional world champion. Now he is not world champion, but number 1. That he cares, like he's a real mentor of the team, and shares his knowledge and shares his time with the other youngster, which is very rare, I think, at least for previously. I did not hear so many occasions like that. Because let's say when many years ago when Magnus started to play in the Olympiad, I remember in Tromsø he was playing. I mean, the team was 20, 30 by rating or something. And look at now. So I think Magnus also has this ambition that, okay, finally, let me play well in the Olympiad and let's bring them together. And it's not board point, it's match point.
Yeah.
Which can make a big difference for some teams.
But I think he enjoys it immensely, being with the guys. And on so many occasions, on previous Olympiads, you could see him praising them when they did well or comforting them. I think it's one of the things that he likes best. And at the same time, it's, as you say, it says a lot about the progress that has been made in Norway in a broader sense, that of course Magnus's rating helps to get the average high, but still 6th place, that says something about the broader growth in the country.
Absolutely.
Any favorites there? I mean, you're not supposed to say that. I mean, it's. I think we probably mentioned the ones that are going to play for the gold, or.
Well, I mean, it's hard to believe that someone else comes up, but I was not carefully looking the list. For me, as a guest. As someone who probably be there almost every day looking around and seeing things in action, I'm just really rooting that we're going to see many exciting games and a lot of excitement on the board, because we do have a lot of players who play exciting chess, which is very important. That I mean, they are just not playing for a draw. It's not fashion these days.
No.
You play your game, and then whatever happens, happens. And it's great to see that they don't have this kind of tension, that they don't dare to come up with whatever idea.
Yeah.
And but again, I can say that we're gonna see the real dramas in the last 3 rounds. Until then, it's all warm up.
Yeah, I think also in the women's Olympiad, it's pretty unpredictable. What surprises me there is that whereas the open team of the Chinese is very strong, all the big guys there, Wei Yi on first board, very surprisingly, and then Ding Liren, that in the women's team, neither Zhu Wenjun, the world champion, and her previous challenger and the next challenger, Tang Zhongyi and Lei Tingye, they're not there, which is okay. There will be some explanation for that, but it's in stark contrast with the open tournament. Are there any of the teams there that you think might surprise us, or?
I don't know. I'm not so closely following at all the women teams, but I know that India is always someone to look out for, because they are extremely dedicated. Mm-hmm. Other teams also, they may be, of course, very dedicated, But I was coaching some of the girl when they were in Hungary. It was what, last January, and I liked very much the approach and the mindset they had about chess, about their development, about their future, about what chess is generally. So I think, of course, some of the players, they are very eager that, okay, last time they did the silver. They won silver, right, last time in Chennai, I think. I think they were very close to win gold, but then Ukraine win the gold.
Yeah.
And then they were only second, I think. And I'm sure that now they are extremely dedicated and work extremely hard that now let's get the gold. So we'll see how it will be there, but I'm very sure that there also it's going to be huge excitement, very tight battles.
Well, I must confess that besides Vaishali, there's, well, I don't know these girls really. I've spoken to many of the let's say Gukesh and Pragnananda and Eric Geisy, and I'm very impressed by them. Not only by their play, but also by their character, by their attitude. Is it very similar with the girls that you've worked with? That it's this mix of being grounded, being very ambitious, disciplined, but humble, all those things that we hear so often.
Generally, yes. Generally, yes. That they love the game, they take it seriously, they want to improve, they ask questions nonstop, you know, that they have their curiosity, they want to improve, they want to invest, they understand that they have to work hard in order to get opportunity and to prove their talent, and they are dedicated, they put a lot of effort into going to tournament, into eating healthy, being healthy. So they put a lot of effort into the fact that they want to perform as good as possible. And also in many cases I experienced that there is a lot of parental help and support. So in India I feel that there are many families where their parents are giving up some of their obligations or job or whatever in order to support their kids. Whether girls or boys, it's the same. But just generally, this mindset is very common there, that they know that the background work can be really making a huge difference.
Sounds wonderful. And maybe a very positive note to finish on. I'm very grateful to you, Judith, for taking your time to look ahead to both the festival and the Olympiad, and to share memories of the Olympiad from your rich career with us. Thank you very much for that. I'm looking forward to the Olympiad. I'm looking forward to the Global Chess Festival, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in Budapest.
Thank you very much. I hope many people can join in Budapest, only for a day or two, or follow us and follow the Olympiad online.
They should. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of the New in Chess podcast. The New in Chess podcast is published every Friday and can be listened to on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the New in Chess website. To leave a comment, go to our socials or email us directly at podcast@newinchess.com. Summer is a great time for reading. Get inspired in our webshop on newinchess.com, where you'll find a wide choice of great chess books for players of all levels. We thank our sponsors at DGT for their support and hope to have you back next week for a new episode of the New in Chess podcast.